Hey everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome back to episode number 34 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. It's been quite a while since we've done one of these podcasts, so I'm excited to get back on the air with you. This week's episode is being sponsored by Tenter. Tenter.com. What Tenter is a Airbnb style service that puts private landowners in touch with people like yourself. How cool is that? So if you ever wanted to go and throw a big party or rent a ranch somewhere, you can now do that with Tenter.com. This week, we're going to take a look at weather, where to find snow for the upcoming winter, what fall is looking like, and where our forecasts are predicting to find, good snow. We're also going to look at some gear, best snowboard bindings of the year, and this week's guest is Gary Hansen. Gary Hansen is a snowboarder living here in the Tetons. Gary was one of the original founders of Snowboard Magazine back in the day with Mark Sullivan. You know that guy. He's got the other podcast going on. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Again, episode number 34 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. I'm pretty stoked this week we actually are using the first time this new MXL podcast microphone. I've got a whole setup going. It feels super pro, so hopefully it sounds better on your end. Again, thanks for tuning in. Episode number 34 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. Today is September 29th in the Tetons, and it is already snowing. Holy cow. That probably is why people are looking at all the ski and snowboard articles on the website right now. But anyway, fall is here in the Midwest. The leaves are already changing. Most of the leaves here in the Tetons are gone. It's going to be a typical fall for the rest of the United States, for the Midwest and the South. It actually might be a little later in the South just because it's been so warm, and fall isn't really wanting to do its thing there yet. The Pacific Northwest is probably going to get the first big snowfall of the year. It's going to be cold and wet into the Pacific Northwest the early part of October. So if you're a split boarder or somebody that goes out ski touring, you might want to consider Pacific Northwest in early to mid-October. Where the rest of the country, the Rockies, here in the Tetons, I think it's going to start to dry out by mid-October, and it looks pretty warm for as we go into the winter season. This year we have an ENSO neutral. What that means is it's not El Nino, it's not La Nina, but it's kind of a mix between the two. What this means is that El Nino that we had last year is starting to transition into a La Nina. That won't really be something we see officially this year as far as La Nina, or at least the forecast aren't showing that, but we've kind of got an in-between, which is really nice. It shows long-range models December is going to be warm and wet through the entire Rockies. Keyword there is wet, but also warm. So keep that in mind. You're definitely going to be at places that have a higher elevation. And don't be surprised if you see some low-elevation rainfall at ski resorts this year. It is going to be hot into the Rockies until about January. I would say if you're looking for snow in the Rockies, the Colorado area, late December, early January is probably going to be the money spot. And then the northern Rockies are going to turn on about mid-February. So that's kind of an outlook on where to find snow for the year. It's always a toss-up. Go to the places that are always good. Look at the weather maps. Check out the forecast. And just book a flight when it's going off somewhere. All right, speaking of flying, ski.com, the website, wants to send you on a dream trip this year. What they're going to do is they're going to select 12 skiers or snowboarders to fly all over the world. You've got a chance to fly to Aspen, to Niseko, Big Sky, Montana, Alberta, Chamonix, oh my God, and last but not least here in Jackson Hole, but you don't want to do that. It's too crowded here. Anyway, ski.com has this dream job. Not only are they going to hook you up with flights to fly around the country to ski all these, or ski these cool places, they're going to give you $2,000 cash. Sick. All you got to do is go to ski.com/dreamjob to sign up. You just make a little video, a little 90-second, tell them why you're rad, tell them why you need to be going around the country. It sounds like it's going to be pretty dang sick. So check that out. One of the cool things about Aspen that was just listed, Aspen just raised their minimum wage for all their ski resort employees to $15 an hour. That's pretty rad. Congratulations, Aspen. That's barely a livable wage in Aspen, or I would assume, but you know, better than nothing. Mount Hood Meadows in Washington or Oregon, Mount Hood in Oregon, actually, they just raised their minimum wage to $12.50. So again, that's pretty cool. A lot of other ski resorts are probably paying their guys like $8, $9, $10 an hour. And that kind of shows in the service. Okay, next up is my interview with Gary Hansen. This took place at the bottom of the Jackson Hole Mountain Resort on a powder day. It was absolutely nuking. And we kind of tucked into this little, I don't even know what it was, a teepee, a tent, some sort of installation. Really cool interview, so check that out.
Big thing is, this is take two. I was not recording the first one. I'm here with Gary Hansen. Gary was one of the founders of Snowboard Magazine. He's been in the industry forever, and we're doing a snowboard test. Gary, what's up? What's the latest?
Good morning. Welcome to Jackson, everybody. I know Mike has been here, living here for a long time. I live over the hill in Driggs, and it's just great to be here at Jackson Hole, at the base of the tram. Chilling. Basically been in and around snowboarding for a long time. I wouldn't say I'm really in the industry anymore. I'm kind of an active participant and backcountry enthusiast, and just love snowboarding. Going into year 33 right now, so pretty pumped, staying healthy and happy. Yeah, been in snowboarding for a while. Moved out of SoCal in 1992, moved to Summit County, did the Summit County thing for a while in the early heyday. Got involved with some park building, early parks of Breckenridge. It was all volunteer work, of course. No paychecks, no pass. You're still responsible for that. Then moved on to working with Frank Wells here and there. He was doing pipe and I was doing park in Breck. And then we scaled out, did the first Pipe Dragon camp in Rocky Mountain Snowboard Camp at Winter Park in 1994 through 96. And was a wrap. Moved back to SoCal in 99, got involved with Snowboarder magazine in the meantime. Mark Sullivan, early snowboarder friend that I met in Summit County, actually had a magazine called Player back in the early 90s. So Mark had always had a good spot for me and offered me some great opportunities in snowboarding. And it was great to reconnect with him this week again. Almost 30 years of friendship with Sullivan. Good to see him on the hill up here at Jackson Hole. But yeah, now I'm just an active participant. I'm a snowboarder. I'm an enthusiast. I really try to schedule my life in the winter around snowboarding and enjoy what all the mountains have to offer year-round here getting outdoors. So,
and your home mountain is over the pass. Where do you ride typically?
I live over the hill in Idaho from Jackson, just west of Jackson Hole in little town in Idaho, and our local resort's Grand Targhee. It's a great spot, super family-friendly place, definitely a chiller mountain than Jackson terrain-wise. And just a smaller parking lot, let's just say.
For sure. Here at Jackson this week, what's going on? We got a bunch of snowboarders riding around. There's a bunch of boards. You've been involved with this event since day one. Tell our readers what this is about.
Well, we got to thank Rob Kingwill. Originally, this was called the JH Jackson Hole Powwow. Rob has now changed it to the Shaper Summit. It's always been a celebration of powder boards, inviting the tribe and family, these contributors to snowboarding through snowboard shape. Basically, powder boards were a thing. They were very fun to ride. We find ourselves riding powder all the time here. We want to snowboard forever. So we're finding, like, basically everyone's quest. Everyone has a different vision quest in building a board. So Rob's gathered, this is year seven. Rob's gathered, you know, between 20 and 30 brands show up usually and put their boards in a tent, and it's real loose. It's not open to the public. There's no one pushing you and telling you what the specs are on the board. You kind of grab one off the rack and you go ride it with your friends at Jackson Hole. So Rob has created a really just fun environment, 3 days of shredding at Jackson Hole with the availability of hundreds of boards, unique boards, things you normally wouldn't see ride in your normal daily life. Small manufacturers, craft beer style production boards. People making 20 boards, people make 100 boards, some larger manufacturers sending reps and some of their design staff down to see what's going on. And over the years, it's kind of evolved. It's definitely a grassroots event, Rob's brainchild, and just happy to be a part of it from the beginning. I'm basically a tester, so Rob would call me a mountain warrior. We go out every day and try to test 4 to 6 boards and give some God-honest reviews on Rob's website and application that he's made for the participants, so they can go back after they leave Jackson and look at the design feedback and the riding feedback from the week. So.
Okay, so at minimum, I mean, you're possibly on 12 boards, maybe 16, maybe more. I know this is a tough question, you know, because we're right in the thick of it. Have any of the boards so far or stood out?
Well, to be honest, you know, I've been involved in a little bit of snowboard design with Unity. Thank Pete Worster from Unity for giving me boards for almost 15 years.
Thank you for that snowboard mag board back in the day.
No worries, Mike. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure working with Unity Snow. I think they make a fine snowboard. I'm partial. I've been riding their side cuts and layups for years. I know exactly what I want. Pete knows me. And so now I pay for boards from him. I didn't buy one yet this year, but it's on the way. Gonna basically, the board I kind of had some input on was the Whale, and there's many iterations of the Whale that Pete's making. He's kind of gone less retail, more towards custom and reorder. Yep. And you can call Pete and get a great board built for you if you're familiar with Pete's boards and they're for you. Highly recommend, just quality build from one person who actually owns the factory, can build a board start to finish. Classic surfboard shaper and just a really talented individual. Thanks, Pete.
And you can email Pete at Unity Snowboards. I mean, he's really open to that. You know, they're a small company. They're not here right now, unfortunately, but his boards are pretty sick. What about here at the Shaper Summit? Has anything really caught your eye?
It's really hard at Jackson when there's like 12 inches of snow, especially wetter snow. I mean, it really requires a board that you're going to feel comfortable on, so it does throw a wrench in the program from what your normal riding chassis is, the measurements you're used to. Kind of go out the window when you show up in the tent. And the idea is you want to get on something. I mean, anyone can ride a regular snowboard anytime. So it's nice to see these small shapers come out, get to ride it, sit across from them, have a beer afterwards, and talk straight to the person who made it and where they're from. And you kind of get this surf shaper mentality. Like Matt Biola's from Mayhem. He shapes boards for SoCal and a lot of pros. He shapes boards for surf breaks and surfers all over the world. And this is kind of a crossover. You got guys from all over the country bringing their offering and their different iteration, however bootstrapping or finance, however they finance their efforts. Not a lot of guys making a ton of money here, but just like basically a lot of people and a lot of love being put into these projects and these beautiful pieces of work. They're pieces of art. Some of them are just one-offs. Some of them are made in vacuum bags. Some people lease press time from larger manufacturers and ski manufacturers to get their products built. And you got to give it to them for, you know, putting their art on the wall and letting people come and stab at it.
You mentioned Matt Biolas. You know, he's the lost shaper. He also does stuff with Mervin Manufacturing. They did a whole line of these surf shapes. And that's one of the things, maybe that's where the reason that this name changed to the Shaper Summit. It definitely seems a lot more surf inspired.
I think it's more quiver inspired now in the snowboard world. I mean, in snowboard, in surfing, you're going to have different boards for different types of waves, different sizes, longboarding days, flat summer days, reef breaks. Different shapes are conducive to the size and curve of the wave. So in that same essence, these shapers are looking at where they ride most of the time and then trying to build almost spots, regionally specific boards for their general foot size, let's just say. So yeah, it's pretty subjective of what's in the tent, and a lot of people hate the stuff that I love, and a lot of people love the stuff that I hate.
One of the things you mentioned, regional, that I haven't heard that described, you know, because I can test a board here in the Tetons that might ride completely different than that board up in the Pacific Northwest, Colorado, light snow, you know, where we're in.
All right, here's a good example. Aaron from Elevated Surf, his thing is tailored to the trim line. He rides different than me. He rides different than most everyone out there. His surf-inspired shapes come from watching surfing and looking at iconic surf shapes and trying to translate that to shapes that work in conditions that he really enjoys. He likes groomers. He likes very smooth, clean surf, he would describe to you. And when it gets choppy, some of these purpose-built boards don't do as well. No lie, just straight up. And then there's Weston out of Colorado, high mountain snow, drier snow, lots of rocks, steeper fall lines. I think they're making boards for Crested Butte, Gunnison, yep. Silverton, and all great snowboards. And I think they just, Weston might be building, basically, if I lived in Colorado and rode 100 days a year in Colorado and my market base and my stoke base was in that region, I'd probably have to cater a little regionally and for what we all like. That designer might have an ethos and ride, just be a free rider like Kuwars, like medium snow. Maybe he likes to go to Crested Butte and ride the North Face and he wants a real responsive, tighter side cuts. Maybe he doesn't like tapers. So it's nice to see how people interpret all of these different design philosophies at the powwow. There's a little bit of everything in here to look at.
Thoughts on camber?
I like camber. My favorite board was the 2010 Rome Anthem SS. Please reissue that, guys.
Matt, if you're listening.
Please, the Rome Anthem SS. Lucas DeBarry gave me one. Ron Faverty gave me one back in the day. Josh Reed gave me one. They discontinued it. It weighed 6.5 pounds. It was a hybrid camber. It was camber in the middle of feet. It was really racy and poppy, and it was just a directional twin that looked like a standard board, but I just honestly loved it in all conditions. That was in all around.
Sounds good right now. I
really wish I had one under my feet right now, because I have been changing some boards. Highlight for me this week is, and I've been on this board before, Mikey Paris, local shaper, kind of. He is a genius. He builds skis and snowboards. He's an ex-aerospace NASA scientist guy. He builds beautiful hand-built snowboards in his factory in Jackson Hole, and he's been doing it for about 15 or 20 years. And he, in my opinion, makes one of the most user-friendly swallowtails for me. 175 pounds, 5'9.5", size 9 foot, usable width, intuitive riding. I was not able to underdrive the board with my really soft old school boots. I like a lot of feel. I like really gummy bear Burton Cartels. I like really soft setup. I like getting low and surfing and really using the side cut and using the energy return out of the rear end of the boards, out of the side cut end. So that's what I do, really. My favorite board of all time is the Unity Whale custom that I designed with Pete. It's a 60. It's got a 760 radial side cut blended out. You know, the dimensions are whatever, but it's magic, you know, for me. So I already have built the board. I've already branded. I'm in my 40s. I know what I like, and I ride about the same sort of terrain each year here. But if I were to and had unlimited money, I'd go buy one of Mikey Paris's Igneous boards for a grand, because it's a piece of art, and it's a specialty board that you break out on a real special occasion. And it gives you joy, you know? It gave me joy. So that was a standout for me. I like what's going on with some of the small brands showing a little bit more momentum and taking the Jacksonville Shaper Summit as a place to put some traction into their brand. It's nice to see Bjorn Linus and ride a few runs with him here. Recently retired from Rome, had a brilliant career with them for so long. I mean, so many mentorship situations he's had with the Rome up-and-coming team, and being, you know, at an age where he might have just had to take a turn to another direction. And I see him riding these new Cardiff snow shapes. He's into the backcountry now. He's into getting clean pow, and he's really into enjoying it and living a real healthy lifestyle. And part of that is riding awesome equipment, being a part of a team designing equipment, and basically staying involved in the stuff you love, which is getting out there. It looks like they're making beautiful split boards. They have an option, like a four or five different lines to look at. Their design ethos is unique. And it's neat to see people that come with a sharp package. So, bravo.
It's really cool to see him still, you know, in the industry. I mean, like you said, so many people, it's a lifestyle, and then all of a sudden you have to pay your bills, and maybe the industry's not supporting you. And now he's part of Black Diamond's marketing, and they're him and Cole Taylor, and they're making a big push into splitboarding.
Well, Black Diamond, if they're moving and want to be involved, and they already make great gear, why not reach out to awesome homies like Cole Taylor? They're brilliant filmers, editors, and wranglers of the athletes that have the experience, and give them more opportunities. And it's nice to maybe look forward to see what Cole's going to put together for Black Diamond, coming from a Tech 9 background. You know, what up, Ethan? Also, though, another thing with Cardiff Snowsurf, got to give up Max Morell and Sam. Those are the real guys behind the scenes there, and they are awesome. Guys, check out Cardiff Snowcraft for some unique powder shapes and split boards out of Utah.
Yeah, it's interesting. With the Cardiff guys, that's one of the split boards that people ask us the most about. You know, you got to test these boards out. And it hadn't been on my radar until I walked by, and you see the boards and you just instantly stop. And you're like, ooh, what is going on here?
Well, I mean, it's one of those, they're a shaping house, but they don't build their own boards. So as another thing that we have here is at Shaper Summit is you have OEM manufacturers here. You have GP87. You have Eric Ludhart here, who's created a factory in China that builds awesome boards. Some of the best boards you may know already are built there, and some you don't. Some have NDAs that you can't disclose where they're built. So, you know, you have him as a resource here to chat about production.
And those are other boards that look beautiful. Those are the Telos ones?
He has a side brand called Telos, and he makes some free ride boards. He makes some carbon composite boards. He makes a couple twins. And it looks like he's put a few riders on the team to be ambassadors this year. And my old friend Jordan Neal used to ride for Flow. Eric Ludhart was involved with Flow for a while. So, you know, he's had some experience in the design, engineering, and production responsibilities, which is something that a lot of the people that are here that have the dream and the outline skill to draw and have an idea in their mind, Eric is actually someone that can actually make it happen. He can make you tooling, he can recommend materials, and a wide variety of materials from this manufacturer. Obviously, he's going to have some sort of minimums and stuff like that, but those options are available, and you see small dudes breaking out their Amex cards and going now, prototyping in tiny facilities or by themselves, mm-hmm. never satisfied, going to another place, prototyping, obviously knowing they're not going to get a finished product through prototyping, but the expense is pretty great in prototyping a snowboard. You're working with new materials. Mm-hmm. If it's your first go at it, mm-hmm. you have a lot in front of you, a huge learning curve, and you could talk to Mikey Franco later. You could talk to Eric Ludhart. You could talk to Aaron. You could talk to the Cardiff guys about how to translate an idea into a prototype and then how to get it from there to, hey, we're going to make 150 of these.
Right.
And now our commitment is in the tens and 20s and 30s of thousands of dollars. And now you're entering the market, you know, in a really unique time to enter a market. It's a niche area, these powder boards. They're, the average snowboarder is going to be still riding a twin tip. And that's fantastic. It's easy to screw bindings on a twin tip and get people out on... you know, on the slopes, and you know, they are very versatile, and I think everyone has a few twins that they love in their quiver, and it's nice to, if you haven't ridden a twin tip, to go back to the roots a little bit, step into a directional shape, put yourself set back in the camber, and ride all day in some pow and see how your legs feel, because the idea, I think, in my opinion, is to have a board that is low effort to ride, that doesn't ride you, that I can overdrive, that feels light underfoot, that has magic bends in the nose and the tail, and has great energy return, and the idea of a feeling like I've been riding Snowplank's bamboo board this year. I bought it 3 years ago, and I've gone through a lot of my boards. Some of my favorite boards, the Unity Whale, the Flow Darwin, the Snowplank's ASIM Goofy Teardrop Tail, Lance Pittman's Illuminati 157 Evolver. Please bring that back, Eric. Make it happen for him. So many good shapes. I wish I could just have them forever, but I do ride about 75 to 100 days a year, and I've kind of gone through and broken all of my favorite boards that have lasted me a good long 4 or 5 years. So the free boards don't come as often anymore as they did in the snowboarding, let's say, in the snowboard mag heyday. So it's nice to support people that, you know, with money that make stuff you like. So I'm always down and looking for a good board to ride, and I'm not afraid to break out a few $100 and offer my chump change for a board at the end of powwow sometimes. And it's, I've come away with some great boards from Shaper's Summit in the past few years, but it's awesome to ride different materials. In my mind, like, I have a certain thing that I like about a board. It has to feel alive, it has to have good energy return, and it has to have great nose bends and allow me to ride the board and flex and bend the board from all the contact points. I really am into edge control. I'm into turning. I'm into really being in tune with the contact of the snow.
So if somebody showed up here with a board that was made in some random, say in Jamaica or somewhere random, and you didn't know, and you jumped on the board, and it was that dream board for you. And then all of a sudden you found out that it was made somewhere, you know, Pakistan, or... Does it matter where snowboards are being manufactured these days if it rides the way that you're looking for?
I mean, you could ask me what I think about the general pop or my personal opinion. I'm not out there trying a bunch of different obscure brands unless it's in a situation like this. So for me, if I find a shape that I love and I think it is unique and or very comfortable to me, if I feel comfortable on it, it's not super important. If I was a brand manager trying to put an image out there and have to worry about a constituency of shops, retailers, online buyers, online editors, product reviewers, podcasters, I might have a marketing plan and spiel for you to say, Mike, but to be honest, I like to support, you know, I'm not going to go out and buy something sight unseen. I live in the mountains. I need to feel it. I need to get a grab on it. Consumers, I just highly suggest if you use product review sites, you know, go to a shop. Buy something from a shop. Support shops that are still left. Go and buy some socks. Go and buy some gloves. Buy some goggles. Look in the second-year-old bin. Just put some money in the shop doors. If you're going to use them as a resource, as someone to key in on what you want, or if you looked at the Patagonia jacket and you need to know how it fits and you're just going to go use them to try it on, just buy something from them and let them know what you're doing.
The amount of returns we get, especially on outerwear, when people buy it through the website, I cringe. I'm like, you have to go. Would you buy a car without test driving it? And to buy a snowboard because I said it's good and it rips and pow and you see a video of me and maybe you're some dude on the East Coast and the board shows up and it's horrible. You know, go demo it. Throw the $50. And most shops, if you demo a board, they'll just take that off of the cost of buying it.
Well, here in Jackson Hole, I know that they have a cool program. You pay the demo fee. It's kind of like $75.
Okay.
But you can switch the board out all day.
Okay. You 75, shit.
But you can come in and switch it out. There, it's like a mini Jackson Hole Shaper Summit. And you can then, if you buy something, I think they might give you a credit towards a purchase. You know, it's still high retail money, but the good stuff costs money. The good materials are more expensive. And, you know, talk to someone who... Tell them how you ride in the shop. You know, tell them what you like. If you're in that retail market and you're going to put that retail money down... If you feel like you're not getting treated well at a shop, then maybe it's not the place for you. But hopefully the shops that are in business now are still supporting snowboarding or the outdoor industry and have some knowledgeable people in place that can help answer your questions. And snowboard's a very personal thing. Snowboarding boots, it's hard to buy them online, guys. If there's one or two things that you do go into shop and buy, just go buy some boots. Go pay the boot fitter. Go have them have some suggestions, guys.
Do you get your boots heat molded? Do you ever do that?
Yeah, I've been riding Burtons and 32s and Rides maybe and some Vans the past few years. And I ride so much that if it feels like the toe box needs to be punched, I'll go get them heat molded. But usually, like by about 30 days, they've got a good pressure on them anyway. You know, some of the liners, the Burton's liner systems kind of are a thermo fit molding, but they actually pack out quite well. You don't necessarily need to. If you're tight in the toe box, you should probably go get the toe pressed out a little bit maybe. And I don't know. You don't want to look at my bindings and ask for advice or my boots. I mean,
What about your pants right now? What brand is this?
I'm wearing
they're bright blue
Zimston pants, and the
Zimston.
The cut is amazing. They are from Switzerland, and I've had a few different pairs of them. I had to buy these pants because I had gone through my last pair. You know, go through gear pretty hard in the Tetons, and so I'd had some Zimsterns that Fabia. Out of Whistler, she used to distribute Zimtern back in the day, and they had sent some stuff to Snowboard Mag, and I pillaged that and wrote it for a while. I got like 4 or 5 years out of it. Sick. And so I went online and I found someone in Salt Lake that actually is a rep or a rider for them and was in town, and I bought a couple pairs of them.
This is a brand that's still around?
They don't distribute in America anymore.
Okay.
But they still sell in Europe. But just like the cut, and it's like an event style fabric. It's a loose baggy cut with venting. And it's great.
Some of the European outerwear is just light years ahead of the North American stuff, especially for getting out in the mountains and, you know, mountaineering.
Mike, that's your expertise, man. And I know you can look on Mountain Weekly's website and listen to the podcast and hear about Mike's take on outerwear and the stuff that he uses out in the backcountry. And, you know, he has a critical mind about it, and he's out there using it all the time, so... I'm pretty happy. I like loose, baggy fit. I'm from the 90s, man. I just like comfort. I like to be able to layer. And I like packable. You know, I think the Tetons this year, we've had variable snow. Right now, we're sitting at 40 degrees. But last week, it was 10. And, you know, packable, puffy, 600 or 800 is kind of essential. Lots of neck gaiters, great socks, wool socks, merinos, merino underlayers, all that stuff, super important in the Tetons. Gear's super important. Me, I definitely have a... I'm not the most tech guy. I don't need the lightest stuff. I'm ridge hiking, I'm cruising, I'm sled accessing, and I'm riding resort. So I need stuff that holds, you know, has some pockets for some gear, and I just, you know, good goggles, good visual stuff, and just warm, dry clothes, man, is all you need. I mean, what else, Mikey? What else you got for me?
Well, let's see. What's the... What is the worst trend in snowboarding?
I don't really follow trends in snowboarding anymore. So the worst trend in snowboarding is looking at the X Games and thinking that the big air or the half pipe is the pinnacle of free riding and free and snowboarding for the consumer. That's not it. Go out and have fun. Get a group of people out. If your friends are skiers and you want to snowboard, go snowboard it with them. Everyone rides together nowadays, guys. Just enjoy the sport. Get outdoors. It's not being a Olympic competitor. If you want to be that, that's great. There's a lots of ways to do that and to pursue that dream. But the act of snowboarding on snow, if it's on the East Coast, on harder snow, on your backyard, on a snurfer or a pal surfer or a grassroots or a Starship custom creation out of Utah, the idea of I'm at an age where when I do get on a snowboard and have a good run, I'm right back to like, dude, 12, 15 years old, a giddy teenager. And it's kind of a fountain of youth for me. So,
last question. When did you first start snowboarding? What was the first place that you strapped into a snowboard?
First started snowboarding in 1984 at Snow Summit. My friends were skiers that we used to surf. We used to skate and surf together. But they were from the rich neighborhood, and their family used to take them skiing. Had a mountain house, but I went skiing with them once and put on the skis, and I'd skied a few times before. But I basically looked around. There was a Swatch contest at Snow Summit this day, and I was watching some pretty talented snowboarders and coming from skating ditches and surfing with my older brother at La Jolla Shores and Torrey Pines and Del Mar. That was our home spot. And riding ditches in the 80s on old school Billy Ruffs with Powell Bones threes and rails, and then watching my friends click into their ski boots. When these people are snowboarding next to me, I took the money my family gave me and I said, I'm going snowboarding. I'll see you at the end of the day. What time you guys get loading up? So I basically went and I rented a it was a Kemper Kemper Freestyle, and it was a log, and I proceeded to go solo. And I floundered about 100 yards off the lift. Saw this dude in a Swatch bib. I remember his name right now. Chad Marshall. He's a dude. He was like a mixed guy. He's an African-American white guy. He was a mixed guy. He was ripping. He had his headband on, Swatch headband, Dago pants. And I'm like, dude, hey, man, I need a quick second. If you could tell me three things about how to get, I'm a surfer, I'm a skater, and this is my first time on a snowboard.
Shit.
If you could tell me two things to do right now to help me get a few concepts, because I really want to do this, man. And he's like, all right, man, follow me. I'm going to point down at where the pressure goes. When you're bend down, squeeze your knees together. When I say put the pressure here, roll it to the heel. When I say put the pressure here, try to roll it over to the toe. At the same time, you're just going to kind of be running down the fall line and just try to, I hate to say it, he just said, follow me, and I'm going to point to where the pressure is. And he honestly took about 100 yards in about 6 minutes of his day. And he said, late, I got to go. And to be honest, I kept falling and starfishing. But at the end of that day, I got the up and down. I'm serious. I picked it up in one day. I picked up the turn in one day, the concept of linking a turn, going over heel to toe, rolling down the fall line and catching it, releasing it, rolling it into the side cut.
Have you stayed in touch with this dude?
No, that's why I just put his name out there. Yo, Chad Marshall, if you're still out there and crazily listening to Mountain Weekly's podcast.
Somebody knows him.
This was the 80s, bro, and you stoked me out, so big up.
Wow.
Big time.
And, you know, that's when snowboarding was attainable to people. You know, you could see it. You saw the ditch. You're like, dude, I skate. I can do that. Nose grab, 180, 360.
I had no desire to do a trick.
The X Games, all that shit now.
All I wanted to do, Mike, was ride smoothly down to the top of the half pipe like that dude did. He had mad style. It was like he was skating, doing four-wheel slides down the street. Let's say you live on a hill, and there's 7-Elevens four blocks down, and you live there, and you know a run down. There's a curb. There's a little gap ollie. There's a wally to snap on some dude's garage door.
Somebody's driveway.
There's like a little handicap ramp. There's a red curb, and then there's the little surf slash right before you put the lift there and go get us, you know, walked into 7-Eleven or the Circle K or wherever you grew up. There was a fun, stylish way to get there, and it definitely, skiing to me, didn't feel natural. I was a surfer and a skater at that time.
And it's all come full circle.
I still get out on the skateboard. I still got a wicked, wicked manual for about 15, I can skate about 15, 20 minutes at the local skate park and Driggs. Like to cruise with my friends, though, and see everyone still having fun on a skateboard. And later in life, I'll make it back to the coast and finish my sliding sideways career somewhere with some small, happy, warm waves to finish, start and finish the day with.
That's the true end of this interview for the Shapers Summit. Thanks, Gary. I appreciate the time. And what else? Are you a part of anything these days? Actually, what's your photo? What's your website for people to check out your photos?
I'm hobbyist photographer. Mountain Standard Imagery online. I got a lot of local scenics from the Tetons. Days on the River, beautiful. Just to be honest, I'm not pushing it. I just grabbed a digital camera when I moved here in such beautiful places. I couldn't help myself but get into it a little bit more. And yeah, I enjoy making prints and hanging some local restaurants. And yeah, man, I sell like maybe 3 or 4 prints a year here and there once in a while, modestly. But yeah.
What's the website address?
It's www.mountainstandardimagery.com. And got to thank some of my mentors, you know, online. Haven't seen them in a while. Abe Blair, Ed Herbold, you know, looking at Jimmy Chin stuff. I mean, guys, photography is amazing, and life is short. It's nice to be able to capture images of your life, your experiences, and I haven't been shooting as much in the past year and a half, but when I do leave this place, I will have an incredible catalog of memories of my time in the mountains and the Tetons. So, yeah, thanks, Mike. Yeah. Super stoked to be a part of your podcast, man.
Killer. Thanks, dude.
All right, next up is gear. Let's talk about snowboard bindings. My man, Andrew Tillery, put together this list of this year's best all-mountain snowboard bindings. To be honest, they're not just all-mountain. They're freestyle, free ride, whatever the hell you're trying to ride. First up on the list, Travis Rice's favorite binding, the Union Falcor. This binding costs $349. It's light, it's damp, it's the T. Rice binding, and it's a Union. Can't go wrong there. Second up on the list is the Burton Malavata. This binding is $319, so it's a little bit cheaper than the Union. It's got the hammock strap and the heel comfort control. Pretty sick if you like Burton. Next up on the list, this is the most expensive binding, the Now O-Drive. Holy shit, this thing's $499.95. Jesus, that's $500. You could buy a splitboard for that. But what you get is a powerful, firm, gnarly binding. If you're the kind of guy that, or girl, that snaps high backs, this is the binding that you need. Next up on the binding is the Flow Fuse. Woo, Flow's on the list? Holy shit. Excuse my French. $259. This is that rear entry. If you've got bad knees, a bad back, you love to snowboard, this is the way you can get into your bindings. Way better than step-ons or step-ins. Next up is the Bent Metal Transfer. If you don't know about Bent Metal, these are the bindings that Mervyn Crew's making. You know, the people that make Libtech, GNU. Oh, sick. Anyway, they've got these fiber drive plates. The binding actually comes with a set of different plates, so you can dial in the base plate stiffness. Holy cow, that is pretty epic. Who else do we got on the list? We've got the Fix Magnum binding. Fix. This is a little bit more of a freestyle binding. We're still waiting for their splitboard binding. Paging fix. But anyway, this is a freestyle binding. It's got gel straps. Super, super comfortable. Even though it's for freestyle and you can tweak it out, you can go ride this thing anywhere. It's a Fix binding. $229. Last up on the list is the Arbor Sequoia binding. This is a beautiful looking women's snowboard binding, $199.95. Guys, if you need to get your chick something for the holidays, check this binding out. Again, the Arbor Sequoia comes with the System X base plate. It's an Arbor. They're new to bindings, but these things are pretty dang sick. All right, everybody. Well, that's episode 34. Thanks for tuning in. You might have noticed that some of our episodes from iTunes are gone. My web developer kind of screwed up, and hey, that's it. So anyway, we're going to be doing a weekly episode for hopefully the rest of the winter. This episode being sponsored by Tenter.com. Again, Tenter hooks you up with landowners, cool places, stuff that you would never have access to, and you get to go camp somewhere really killer or glamp. For more information, check out Tenter.com. Thanks, everybody, and I hope you tune in for next week's episode. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. Peace.